tough talking Greg Sankey from the SEC spring meetings, where he's saying what I think that Ross Bjork would say. I think he's saying what Tony Petitti would say from the Big Ten. I think we're in the final days of the NCAA, and while you guys are going to say, hey, that's a good thing, I think they're going to create another NCAA that's just going to have a lot more teeth, that's probably going to be able to get around the antitrust laws. And to talk about all that, we welcome in Dan Wetzel from ESPN. He was one of the hosts of the greatest college sports podcast I ever heard, College Football Inquirer. Still a great man, still thorough, and he still joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Dan, how the hell are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Lima gave me your number, and I was gonna wish you congratulations on your big move to ESPN, and then I decided not to. Sorry.
That's okay. I felt the love and spirit, Ken. I felt the love and spirit.
You should. I mean,
we've been with you since day one.
Yes, we have.
Day one. They really have. Yes, thank you. It was really these appearances that have launched my career through the years.
Dan Wetzel joining us here.
I owe it all to you guys.
You're very welcome, Dan. Dan Wetzel joining us here on the show. Obviously, you've covered all this in great detail here. What is the future of the college football playoff? Because I think Greg Sankey and the SEC and the Big Ten, I think they're going to get what they want, and they're going to probably get of 16 teams, it'll be a 16-team playoff, and I think they'll probably get, dare I say, 12 of those spots, and then what? Notre Dame, and so three spots go up to the other two P4s, and maybe one from the group of five, but probably not?
Well, yeah, so there's two options here with 16 teams, which, you know, we only had 1 year of 12, and we're already expanding it, which is classic. I thought it went pretty well. I thought it was a good playoff. I don't think we need to go past 12. I think we had a pretty good deal last year. I think you're getting into more and more flawed teams, but these guys' jobs are to, you know, take care of their teams. And the fact that Alabama did not make the playoff last year and Indiana did remains, or SMU, whichever one you want to pick as their thing, has really rankled people in the SEC. They are conveniently forgetting that Alabama lost to both 6-6 Oklahoma and 6-6 Vanderbilt. And this is hardly like one of these classic Nick Saban teams, but whatever. So we're going to get 16. It seems inevitable. How that will look. Now, there's been all this talk of four automatic bids from each of those two leagues. I will say yesterday, Sankey and the SEC was talking far more positively about simply having a 16-team tournament where you have five conference champs, the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, and then a group of five, and then you have 11 at-large bids. I find that much preferable to multiple automatic bids per league. There's even this, they had one proposal going with, like, if you have a 16 team, wouldn't you just play like one play 16, two plays 15? They had this convoluted double bye system. Everything is just geared to trying to protect the SEC and the Big Ten. My thing is, they don't need protecting. They're going to get all these, they're going to get the majority of the bids every year because they have the majority of the best teams. So just play it out, make it simple for people to understand. Hey, you win your conference, you get in, everyone else is up for this at large that takes care of Notre Dame and things like that. So actually there was a pretty good switch in tone yesterday of the SEC's interest in what they're calling 5 plus 11, opposed to these automatic bid things. I think whatever the SEC decides, the Big Ten will probably go along with. But those two are definitely partners in hashing this out right now.
Just real quick, you said this convoluted system where there might be double buys. Isn't that just to protect another, what has been a cash cow in the past, which is the conference championship, and they want to make that something that never goes away, despite the fact that we don't need it anymore?
Yeah, that's part of it. The conference championship game, which again, I would get rid of those and move the season, get the season to be shorter, and take that week and use it to say maybe play Army Navy then, and get on with getting more games in December and try to like have the semifinals on New Year's Day or something like that instead of the quarterfinals. but that we're deep in the weeds. But yeah, they make a lot of money off this, particularly the SEC championship game. The Big Ten one has done pretty well, but it's rarely been competitive. The SEC championship game is the first championship game. It's been a big thing. But when both teams are still making the playoffs, what's the point? So that is one, the seeding has to be the point is really it. So they're trying to do things like that, but it's like it reminds me of my golf game by the end of the year where like the fix is got a fix. And then there's another fix. It's like your elbow. And then you got to keep showing, get your weight, you know, and you're just trying everything. And at the end, you're just slicing it all over. They've got so many little riders on this stuff and all these things. Just go simple, right? Just hit it straight down the middle. 5 and 11, that'll be good. I would prefer 12. I would prefer 5 and 7, but money talks at the end of the day. Everything about this is always going to be about, pretty much going to be about money.
Oh, we're going to go deeper into the weeds here. Dan Wetzel joining us on the show. What's the chances we get this like CSC situation headed where it sounds like it would just replace the NCAA, except that we would find ways to, not we, I'm not part of it, but they would find ways to get around antitrust laws and kind of put college football with NIL or something like it back to the way college football used to be?
Well, they would like something like that. Yeah, it's everybody hates the NCAA until you realize you have to have something. Sort of like the NCAA. First, somebody's got to run the championships.
Someone's got to be the bad guy. Yeah,
and someone's got to be the bad guy. And what they've actually proposed, which I find hysterical, that it's going to be even less popular, is a tougher bad guy. So if you're accused of these, if you're accused of violations, there's no way to really fight back, and you can't sue. And this, like that, this is they're going to get sued every single which way. Particularly now that you have private businesses and private businessmen and women and boosters directly involved with the athletes. Like before, the NCAA is like, well, you can't really talk to the athlete, right? Now it's like, oh, I can give them $1 million. And the NCAA says, well, you only were supposed to give them 700 grand. That was their value. So you're now in trouble and your name's getting raked through the media and all that. And you're like, hey man, I didn't do it. Like they're going to get, this is probably not going to end well, but that's what they're trying, is to put the toothpaste back in the tube on some of this stuff with a new NCAA. So there's a lot of talk that we're going to end the NCAA, we're going to quit the NCAA. The next thing you've got is just the NCAA with a different name. It's just a kind of a way to share less money. I'm always dubious that this will actually get done. I don't know that there's the ability, and particularly political ability. I mean, you guys tell me, but like obviously in Ohio State is by far and away the most popular team, the most powerful team. Their interests are most important. But you think about all of the, if they tried to break away, think of all of the representatives, the state senators, the interests of all the other schools, right? There's 6 MAC schools. There's Cincinnati. There's like Dayton and Xavier and Cleveland State, different schools that are also in Division I that would lose out if this whole thing crumbled. I don't know that you're going to be able to pull that off in every state in the country where the state legislature and your state senators and everything are just going to be like, yeah, cool, Ohio State, do whatever you want, and you can just try to just leave everybody else behind and decimate everyone. That's going to be a harder fight, and I don't know. Maybe it could. You think that would succeed in Ohio? I don't know. But is it going to succeed in every single one of these states? That one I really have questions, because every state's like that.
Dan Wetzel joining us from ESPN. Obviously, there has been a push from the larger stakeholders, especially the Power Four as it stands now, to lobby for NIL legislation. We've heard some of the key figures in college football, past and present, talk about this. And obviously you've got people, you know, that are on Capitol Hill that have been outspoken about this. And they've even pushed the president to talk about this. Do you think this happens? And can you put the toothpaste back in the bottle?
I've been skeptical of this all along because there's multiple interests. Like, I get old football coaches and ADs, they want to go back to the system of, you know, scholarships and how it used to be. There's other schools that are quite happy with the new system where you can not just out of like some sense of, hey, the players deserve money, but that it equals the competitive balance. It flattens the competitive balance. I don't think it's a secret that we've started seeing Northern teams do even better than before in college football since NIL came in, right? Ohio State was the only school that could potentially compete with SEC teams, Southern teams. And they won one title. Now we've seen Michigan win it. We've seen Ohio State win it. We've seen Notre Dame make a final. We saw Washington make a final. We saw TCU make a final. Penn State's probably preseason number one or number two. It might be their team. You know, the money balance there has evened things out just in that. Now, these are not small operations. I'm going to tell you, Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan are small things, but Michigan and Penn State were non-competitive at a national level until NIL came along. So it's changed the game. It's really not as I get that if you were one of the three or four teams that could compete for a national title, you don't like this, you make a lot of noise. But there's a lot of schools going, hey, this isn't bad at all. Notre Dame particularly saying, oh, we have money. What we don't have is, you know, a great location surrounded by tons of talent or this or that. So you have that. You have the Sherman Antitrust Act, which, you know, every time you hear a college football coach talk about how they can solve their quote-unquote problem here, none of them have ever heard of the Sherman Antitrust Act. But the Supreme Court most certainly has. It's really hard to get all the politicians in favor of things where you're trying to say, hey, this 19-year-old doesn't deserve to have the right to make money legally. Yeah, he does. And so there's a lot there where it's very hard to get it back in. Now, they have direct revenue share now that certainly might help, you know, cut down on just the big payments, I guess, that seem to upset some of the parties here. But I find a lot of it is just a lot of complaining. I mean, they'll say things like, oh, you know, you can't build a team when you're paying the players. Like, I thought Ohio State had one heck of a team, not just talent, but like a real togetherness. If Ohio State last year's team was only about money, if those guys were there playing simply because that's what they were getting the most money, they would have crumbled after the Michigan loss. They just would have quit. And then everyone started preparing for the draft. Instead, they got more together and tougher and more of a brotherhood and go out and win the national title. And I think the same thing with Michigan the year before. I don't see these like, we can't have a team or we don't have great football or it's not exciting because some of these guys are getting paid. I don't see it. So I think there's a lot of noise about how to fix the system. But when you get down into the weeds, it's a lot harder. There are things I think everybody understands, you don't really like two transfer portals. There's a lack of, you know, contracts, things like that, that could potentially get fixed. But I don't see it going backwards in any reasonable way, nor should it.
Dan, let's get to the most serious parts of our conversation today. Will you be joining forces with other seasoned journalists in going after North Carolina to pore over some of their secret emails regarding Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson?
Well, there's certainly a lot of journalists trying to go through. This is trying to find any little, you know, could we get an emoji? Could we get a heart emoji or something in these? I'll tell you what, I am a believer that this is, this is fantastic content. I'm sure you guys haven't had any enjoyment out of it or any laughs. I'm very interested in the Belichick thing. And when I talk to people at North Carolina and on his staff and different people around, for all the Jordan Hudson, kind of weirdness, they still say he's there at like 5:30 in the morning, all fired up for football. So I still think it's Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick. Whether he can win in North Carolina, I don't know, but I don't think he's spending that much time with his girlfriend.
I'd jump out of bed too if I had something to, you know, get me excited in life. I mean, I get up at 4:30. I got a great wife. I can understand Bill Belichick here.
About to say, boy, you really just stepped in it there.
No comment. Yeah. He did kind of rally there.
He did rally. He did. For a second, I go, oh,
he
God.
He did rally, yeah.
Dan, find Dan on Twitter. At Dan Wetzel on X, on Twitter, whatever. Dan Wetzel,
thank
ESPN.
You,
Dan, thank you. Dan Wetzel on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Outstanding from him. Before we set sail on this audio of John Fanta, Fanta 03, that I had a whole break to tell Owen about, and we didn't get to that.
Well, you told me about it 2 hours ago, so I have it on my head.
Well, I told you about a Mount Olympus, so, you know, we got that out there.
How's that going? They're going to do that one day?
That's up to them, man. I don't know. Anywho, what am I missing? You guys got to help me out here a little bit. What am I missing with the Belichick?
You were going to tell... Oh.
What was
you were going to tell us about the Guardians and how they've wasted
this. The Guardians haven't wasted anything.
Oh, we don't need to do that again.
Major League Baseball is forcing them to waste something. Is what I've said. Damn it. Go back and listen to that, 92throughthefan.com. Listen to 6, and then when did I have my meltdown? 7:20.
7:20.
Listen to 6 o'clock and then 7:20. Dare to compare if you want. What am I missing in the Belichick thing, man? Why is Pablo Torre all worked up and doing like a big, like Bob Woodward deal over this? Like, what is there any actual impropriety at North Carolina about Bill Belichick and a 24-year-old having a relationship? What is this? What am I missing? What are they doing that is so bad?
I think he
did this whole deep dive and he's like, actually, Jordan Hudson was 19. And I'm going, that's still legal. I don't understand the issues that are here.
For whatever reason, it seems like people want to get down to the bottom of
two people getting together?
No, of what she has to do with the football team. Because of her, the way that she controlled the interviews and how she's already popped up on some of the emails is kind of the liaison, you know, but she's not on the staff. So why is she directing inquiries to the head football coach?
So they're mad that she is the go-between, like we... Guys, we had a guy here once. I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. We had a guy here once that if you wanted to get a hold of him, you had to call his wife. Excuse me. You had to text her, and then she figured out whether or not it was worth his time.
Yeah.
And then he would, if he felt it was worth his time, he would get back to you. Like, this is not new to me, I guess I should say. Now, I am in a situation where my wife handles all my affairs. I don't like doing math and all that stuff. We've talked about that many times. Maybe it's because of that. My wife is not a 24-year-old woman. Again, I don't... Is it because she... Does she have an official role where she's paid by UNC? Is that the issue that they're having? I want to know. Because all it is just like, guys, you guys want to get on the salacious details of Bill Belichick's relationship with Jordan Hudson. And I have no other recourse but to say... 73-year-old people have been wanting to get with 24-year-old people since way before any of us listening to this and talking about this were ever born. And they'll probably want to do it long after we're all done talking about this. I don't understand what the other issues are. I hear all the time it's the Wild West in college football. So what is the problem? If UNC is going to allow it, oh my God, UNC is a lot. UNC is a lot of things. UNC allowed Butch Davis to just not have anybody go to class.
Yeah.
And then made fun of guys for going to class.
Obviously, it's the perfect storm because you have this really bizarre sequence of events. Bill Belichick going to UNC to begin with at his age, hiring the staff that he hired, bringing in Mike Lombardi. And, you know, you have this crusade that Pablo Torre is going on.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I've got his quote here. We want to be able to tell... where the public money is going towards, whether it's standard operating procedure, whether or not they are, you know, binded to their legal obligations. That's what he's saying, because he's threatened to sue them if they don't fork over their emails, because it is a public institution. So I just think it's almost more tabloid stuff, where because Bill Belichick is famous,
that's why I'm not worried. Obviously, that's why it blows my mind. Where I got a lot of guys who consider themselves serious journalists. I go, are you that serious? Are you that serious over it? Like, I don't see any impropriety. I've seen a lot of unusual things around college sports over the last 5 years. I have active NBA players who are general managers, quote unquote, of college basketball programs right now. There are guys who are football players, former football players, just launch right into college football coaching. And some of them have been very successful at doing so. I mean, Eddie George, for crying out loud, which, by the way, we have to reestablish the relationship there as we get closer to college football season, because I want to see how that's done. I mean, there's a lot of uncharted territory that we're going into right now. And I got, okay, Jordan Hudson is his girlfriend or fiance. I don't know what the situation is, because now that's a whole nother level of reporting that she's telling people that stuff or whatever. And I'm going, okay, so she handles his affairs of correspondence with anything of what he needs to do. Like, it's not unusual for a guy to have an assistant. It's really not unusual for a guy's wife or girlfriend or significant other of any sort to be an assistant of the guy.
Well, people are alleging certain things, like there's already been a banning of her on campus. People want to find out if that's true, whether or not there's already kind of a broken down trust between Belichick and the administration. So there are people looking into that, whether or not she has this outsized influence over him and how long that's been going on. People are wondering if this went on when he was coaching, the Patriots. You know, remember the original Ring camera video that had come out with him shirtless?
Which I thought that was a fake. I thought that we had talked to people that said that
was a fake,
or that it wasn't him or something like that. That stuff, I don't know. I mean, hey, you know what? He's 73 years old. I mean, maybe he's not a great coach anymore. Maybe he's just kind of lost it. I have no idea. I'm not picking. Again, in my eyes, I think that a 9-3 year for North Carolina is a fantastic season. But I just, some of the stuff that I keep seeing about it, I'm just like, man, I think you guys are walking around what you really want to talk about, which is salacious details of an older man dating a young woman. I think that's basically what a lot of people want to do. And I don't understand. Well, I do understand why, but I don't like that they are portraying themselves as doing some sort of devout work of finding the truth and reason of college sports, where I'm going, no, you're not. That's already been done. It's all out there now, man. Like, we went, like, Jeremy Pruitt and the money and the fast food bag for recruits, that was like the last stand of craziness in college sports. Now it's all out there for everybody. You can do whatever you want.
Well, with all of this said, do we think they're actually going to be any good this year?
North Carolina?
Yes.
I don't know if they're going to be that great this year. Again, I said 9-3, I think, would be an outstanding year for them. I don't know what their schedule looks like right now.
Are we going to hold whatever happens this year, if it goes bad, are we going to hold it against Bill Belichick if he has a disastrous one-and-done college season?
And it looks like they're probably going to hold it against her, too. Because I'm sure that she becomes a scapegoat for everybody, because they're going to have, I mean, they have what? Is it a 2-year deal with Bill Belichick worth a lot of money to start? I thought that's, I might be wrong. I thought it was to start out at 2 years with Bill Belichick.
And is his son guaranteed?
Maybe I'm wrong.
Guaranteed anything?
I thought that he was guaranteed something. But if it doesn't go their way, I'm sure she'll be made a scapegoat in some way. And then he'll either like that or not. Like, their schedule, it's not the toughest thing in the world. It's certainly not the easiest thing in the world. They can go to a bowl game with this. If they went 8-4, 7-5 with this schedule, it's a nice start. You're starting all over again. And plus, if you went 7-4 or 7-5 or 8-4 with that schedule, I think you'll get a lot of people to believe. I mean, you and I talked about this. Would we want our kid right now to play for Bill Belichick? Well, if they offered the most money, what am I supposed to say? But if they offered as much or less, yeah, you know what? I'd rather have him play for Dave Doran for a year over at North Carolina State. Then we'll reevaluate things. That's a more established program in that state. Maybe I'd rather him do that. I can see that going that way. Maybe the new guy from Wazoo who's over at Wake Forest, maybe that's a more interesting situation over there at North Carolina, in North Carolina, before you get to the Tar Heels. I don't know. I keep finding it odd that a lot of quote-unquote serious journalists are kind of dancing around, that they just kind of want to see what is going on in Bill Belichick's bed. It's basically what it feels like to me. And I don't... What he does is what he does. What they do is their business. I got people tweeting me about Browns and who they're dating right now. It's like, okay, what he does is his business. Until it's not until it becomes our business, it's their business. 216-474-0092. I want to get to this audio from John Fanta here. So I heard this yesterday on Afternoon Drive. As much as Nick likes to say that we hate each other, we don't. And I listen to him and Jonathan. I thought they do a fine job. Here is John Fanta yesterday on judging Kevin Stefanski.
obviously, we break down every single thing, every single game, because it's interesting and it's compelling. But what is the metric for success going to be? You asked me about the quarterback situation. My vote is Flacco. I don't know where either of you two side heading into like a week one situation. But my thing is, like, I'm really curious to say, okay, what's the metric for success for this team, and what determines if Kevin Stefanski and this regime is back in 2026?
What's the metric for success? The metric for success is wins. We're in year six, guys. Now, I'm a tough talker right there. How many wins does Kevin Stefanski need to keep his job? Seven? Where it's a beyond, like, he's staying. Seven wins? Is he safe? I thought the number is seven.
I would imagine seven is an overachieving year right now, considering where most people think the Browns are.
So if he gets seven, okay, so how low are you willing to go? Are you willing to go six and he keeps his job?
Well, I think does part of it depend on whether or not there looks like there's quarterback development.
That's why it doesn't just matter on wins. Like, I don't think the wins matter as much as the future.
But say your defense and your running game gets you to seven wins, but your quarterback play looks abysmal, some of the worst in the NFL.
So that's a bigger issue.
Then what happens?
Because you're right, and I want to simplify that as much as I can, because you have Denzel, you have Joel, you have Miles, you have veterans on this team. So at brass tacks, I got to break it down to wins. Like, that's why I was so confused, and I think that's why everybody was so confused coming out of last season. Like, what's your goal? Are you building for the future here? Are you trying to develop a quarterback and build for the future, or are you trying to win now? Because having Jerry Jeudy on your football team and paying him money, which was a good contract by the Browns, by the way, that's saying you're trying to win now. Signing Myles Garrett to a massive extension is trying to win now. Having Denzel is trying to win now. Of course, I mean, I know that some of those contracts are untradeable, and certainly Myles' is now. But what exactly is your goal? So if you are keeping all these players, like Myles Garrett, teams would line up around the block two times over to get Myles Garrett on their team. So if you're keeping Myles, wins, at some point, we got to stop the madness and say, hey, you got to have an amount of wins to stick around. You have to do something that's progress instead of using words like metrics and development, and we're talking about all those other things. Some point, the scoreboard's got to be what proves it. And I'm not asking for the world. You're a 3-win football team. I'm saying seven guarantees you your job for 2026. Seven wins. That's just, and for a lot of fans, I think that they're going to hate hearing that on their way into work, because they're thinking, wait a minute, seven wins, another year of Miles, Joel Bitonio maybe in his last season, all these names I just mentioned. Hell, we're arguing about wasting prime years of great baseball players. How about talking about wasting prime years of good football players? And that's an organizational situation. I'm not blaming the NFL on that like I would with Major League Baseball. So how many wins make sure that they stay? I mean, we got to come down to an actual number. And I think seven is probably that, and maybe I'd be willing to go as low as 6-216-474-0092. What say you? There are some people saying our standard is way too low for Kevin Stefanski and the Cleveland Browns, which is, you know what? I'm fine. Welcome to it. I think it got, like, real Xavier P. I mean, he is listing the reasons. No way. And I got to tell you, if you are a person who, and I think there's a lot more people than what we give air to, who are just wondering, like, why do you guys hold him in such high regard? I think it would spin you up into a circle over here. And, like, what are the metrics? How do we judge? Like, you judge him by wins and losses. That's what you judge him by. Like, there's plenty of reasons. If I sat here and made excuses for every coach, because usually coaches who get fired, usually I would say 90% of the time, they have a very valid excuse of why they failed. They didn't have a quarterback. Okay, well, if I just sat there and kept saying that they didn't have a quarterback, I think a lot less guys would get fired. I think we'd have a lot more 10-year guys, 11-year guys, things like that. I just can't continue. I've said a lot of things that were, I think, true of Kevin Stefanski, but they start to wear thin over time. You're 6 years into this. You got to start taking a step forward here and becoming a competitive team every single season. And I'm not asking for 10-7. I'm asking for seven wins. You went from 3 games to 7 games. I can't see a scenario where you would fire a guy. I mean, if you got 7 wins out of a team that goes into the preseason with 4 quarterbacks vying for the starting job, now, how much of a real competition that is, we can discuss. But you got 4 different guys going in to start the most important position. You get 7 wins out of that football team. Hell, that's a pretty decent job, I would say. But to a person who has tried to hold him to a higher standard, I think even hearing me would be too soft pedaling for him.
So they don't really, you're saying they don't care that their expectations are that of a rebuild, right? Like the fact that Vegas has them anywhere from 4.5 to 5.5 wins.
I understand that. I think that they become frustrated. I think the people who are, you know, saying Stefanski truthers makes them sound like a bunch of nut jobs. So I'm not trying to do that. I think they're trying to hold professional football coaches accountable for their job. But if I were to look at him and say exactly what you just said, the expectations of 4.5 going, then why is he always safe? Then why is he always like above reproach? Why is it always the conversation to be had about, well, if he got fired, he'd find another head coaching job tomorrow? I mean, I like Kevin, and I think he's done an admirable job in so many ways, but damn, I mean, it is professional sports. The name of the game is eventually to win. It's professional football, especially. And you play the hand you're dealt. I'm sure Dennis Allen is upset that he got a raw deal with the quarterbacks that he had in both, well, not Vegas, but Oakland at the time, and he had a rough go of it with the injury to Derek Carr, and then he was down there in New Orleans. I'm sure he's upset about it. I'm sure there's plenty of coaches who said, if I had a quarterback, I'd still be employed, who probably did have really good ideas. Probably Browns head coaches. I mean, Mike Pettine wasn't so bad if you had a quarterback that wasn't Johnny and had a franchise, bona fide franchise quarterback instead of the arguments that we were having. Maybe Mike Pettine would still be around. Maybe Hugh Jackson would still be around. May a lot of these guys feel that they would still be around in different places. So what makes Kevin special? I think that he can be a good offensive mind, but I also have to wonder so many times, okay, is it just a system that you fit? Is it just a system that you have to have? Because you got to make the changes with the times. If we're going to be looking at certain quarterbacks who, you know what, they're not as under center. They don't do as much play action. They're not as good in 12 personnel. All right, well, then, you know what, we're going to have to be able to switch with some of this stuff. You have to stick and move here. It's an ever-changing atmosphere in the NFL, and you got to be able to keep up with it or you're going to be left out.
You said the number 7, though, or it was Fanta
who
brought it.
Okay. Which I sound so exasperated by, because 7 is, I think a lot of people are into their windshield going, what, 7 wins is all you're holding them accountable? Whoa, you're a big, tough-talking Ken, which I can understand where you guys are coming from.
Yeah, but I
want
to know if those fans were betting the win total this year, what they are truly with their money. It's one thing to just not like a coach, want the team to replace the coach or whatever, but what would be your realistic expectations going into the season either way?
So my realistic expectation, 6 to 7 wins. 6, I don't know if I can guarantee you. 7, man, if you get the 7 wins from 3 last year, and I know that they weren't really trying in the final month of the season, but if you get the 7 wins this year, well, considering the holes that we are supposed to have, well, you get the 7 wins, that means that some of the young guys have played well. That means that maybe some of your rookies have played well. Like, I don't know if I just want to fix numbers and say, well, you know, Quinshon Judkins has to run for this amount, but if he plays well, he's going to help you win 7 football games. Jerry Judy's going to help you win 7 football games. Other guys are going to help. And a quarterback will have had to have played well. Damn it, maybe Shador, maybe Dylan, maybe anybody. Yes.
Well, I think you have to assume if they get to 7 wins, they've found a guy to play quarterback at least for the next couple seasons.
Well, you'd think
because
so. But then,
with the way they hold their draft picks right now and the number of picks that they hold so high in the or could potentially hold high in the draft, at some point, much like last year, they had to have a defining line in the schedule to go, all right, we're out of it. We got to start worrying about where we are in the draft.
It's another thing that some people might get mad at me about today, and I've done a good job of that this morning. 7 wins with one of the young guys. Throw Kenny in there. It'll be 27.
Kenny is the one that you can actually bank on the most to get you to 7.
Well, fair enough, right?
Today.
Any one of them 3 guys, Dylan, Shador, Kenny, any one of them guys gets you to 7 wins, that's just enough to make some people, half your fans, want to take position players next year with those 2 first-round picks, and just enough to make the other half go, nah, this guy ain't good enough. We got to go for the gusto here with one of these other guys.
Yeah,
what that becomes.
What's the ceiling of the quarterback you have?
And I know that everybody wants it in a nice tight bow where, hey, you know what, let's just go out there and win 2 games and we don't have to worry about any of this other stuff and we can get rid of all this stuff. Life is very, very, very rarely like that. So I'd be willing to bet, with the way the things are going for the Browns right now, I would say, watch your quarterbacks in college football this year. all the names that are out there that are possibilities. Hell, if you want to even have some fun, I don't think he's coming out, but you want to talk about Arch Manning, go right on ahead and talk about Arch Manning. I mean, help, his Uncle Peyton was in a commercial here yesterday with Pumpkinhead and Macho Fan and Bernie Kosar and everybody. Did you see that?
I saw some of that online.
I don't know what the commercial's for, but they're doing something here in Cleveland. And if you want to go ahead and have that, fine. Because I think that next year, the big conversation, if you get the 7 wins, and I think you can, if you get the 7 wins, it's going to be Kenny, Shador, Dylan, one of them three guys, or one of the guys out of the draft. And that's the decision you have to make. Are one of those guys going to be worth it to invest in? That if you get them X, Y, and Z, they can get you to 11 wins in the playoffs consistently. Or do you want to say, you know what? One of these guys, they have a much better chance to be a bona fide franchise quarterback. You traded those picks last year for a reason, so you got to go and do that. I think that that is a convoluted goal, but I think that that's the goal of where we're at right now. I don't think it's going to be as simple as one of these guys takes off, takes this team to another level. That'd be a lot of fun. That'd be great. I think it's much different than that, and it's much more complex than that.